Welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name's Phil Topham, Executive Director of the FIEC, and the band is back together after the summer. So with me is Adrian Reynolds. Hello, Adrian, Associate National Director.
Hello.
And John Seymour, our National Director, with me as well.
Hi, Phil.
And for those of you watching, you will see we have changed things around. Basically, listeners demanded we remove the headphones, so we have done. Welcome to In the News.
Watchers maybe did.
But welcome to In the News. This is our regular dive into things that are happening in the news this last couple of weeks. Before we get there, John, you've just come back from UCCF's Forum. Tell us a little bit about that.
I have. I was delighted to be invited to Forum for a day. It's their conference for student leaders in CUs, which was over in the Quinter Centre. But at Forum, they were launching Uncover, which is a new evangelistic resource. Uncover's been going as a programme for about 15 years. What it does is it gives students sort of gospels and wants to encourage them to be able to share their faith with their friends by being able to read a gospel together. And resources, Uncover is a really well-designed resource that enables you to read together, and it has a series of studies in it that enable you to engage and meet Jesus. The whole idea is that it's through hearing Jesus and meeting him in his word that we're drawn to him and come to faith. And so they've produced a new version of Uncover Luke. And I think it's a really exciting initiative. It's been redesigned. I think because things have changed so much over the last 15 years, 15 years ago, the focus of Uncover was very much on the truth of the gospel. The prevailing cultural environment was the new atheists. New version of Uncover is really tapping into the greater openness of Gen Z and the student age group to the gospel. There really is lots going on amongst that age group. There clearly is a renewed interest in Christianity, a renewed openness to speak about spiritual things. And this new version of Uncover seeks to tap into that, whilst maintaining the truth of the gospel, also wants to particularly show the beauty and goodness of Jesus, and wants to speak into the very real needs that people have in their lives, and to show how Jesus and the gospel addresses issues like loneliness, a lack of hope, the ability to be able to be transformed, what true freedom means. So I think it's a really helpful way of being able to engage with the gospel. There were about 1,000 student leaders there, and their longing would be that all across the country, amongst students this year, students in CUs would be sharing the gospel. So just imagine if every single leader there, even more than that, if every member of every CU were to read Luke's gospel with one other student in the coming year, how significant that could be. So I think it's a great initiative. And whilst it's there for students, I actually think this could be a great resource for churches as well. Many of us in our churches are seeking to reach Gen Z, make the most of that moment of opportunity. This is a resource that really connects with that group. It's very easy to use. And I think one of the things that came across that was so helpful is we need to just, in a sense, normalize evangelism. We can make it something complicated and difficult. We were encouraged to just think that we need to be living normal lives of building relationships with others. And in the course of that, speaking of our faith in the Lord Jesus and not being afraid to invite others to want to consider the gospel for themselves. So great evidence from the EA that 47% of people reading the Bible is key to their faith journey. And some statistics from Fusion, that another student group, that says that 38% of students would be willing to read the Bible with a Christian.
So we need to normalize that. We need to normalize not just evangelism, but we need to normalize reading the Bible. And I think this is a particular moment. We're going to do a podcast soon, actually, just exactly about this, about different ways we can get people reading the Bible, how we can just give the Bible to people. So here's a very simple idea for Sunday I got from a friend. Rather than just giving visitors a copy of a Bible as they come in, you know, here's a church Bible, why not say to them, here's a Bible, keep it.
So you're giving the Bible
very
away,
simple
giving
thing.
The scriptures. It's interesting what you were saying, John, about Uncover, because I was listening to an apologist over the summer on one podcast summer, I can't remember who it was, basically saying that young people today aren't just asking, is the Bible true? They're asking, is it good? And that seems to be a really important moment for the next generation. Is this good? The truth is, of course, is central, but actually, is this good?
I think that's right. And it's a reminder to us that the gospel never changes, but the context into which we speak the gospel does change. The questions that people have, the particular barriers they have to faith will be different. We see that in the New Testament. The gospel is not preached in exactly the same way in the book of Acts to Jewish groups, to pagan groups, to Greek intellectual groups. The same truth that Jesus is Lord, who's come to bring salvation from sin, is declared to them all. But it has to be presented in a way that particularly connects.
Yeah. Even to individuals, there's a difference between an individual and a group, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah. I think, reminded, there's a danger always of using evangelistic resources that worked in the past and just thinking that they will keep working. Mm. But very often the culture has changed. Mm. So again, the point was made that in the past, 15 years ago, students were quite happy to come to theatre-style debates about apologetics. Now it needs to be much more relational and one-to-one in that context. So the gospel doesn't change, but we need to rethink how we communicate it and in what context we communicate it. And I think that's a great lesson for churches. We preach the same gospel, but we need to constantly be thinking, how can we connect with the particular community that we're seeking to reach and bring the gospel to bear in a way that engages and connects and answers the questions they have?
September is always a feeling of a kind of new year. It's the new financial year for the FIEC, but lots going on in this coming year. Adrian, just say a little bit about the Leaders Conference and then Rising Lights for us before we look at...
It's worth saying, of course, that for most churches, that's the way it works as well. I mean, we might think in calendar years, but churches, especially churches that have got numbers of children, we often think that way.
You know, we the work children, in the school year.
We work in the school year. So I think for many people who are listening, it's not just for us, but for many people listening, this will feel like, oh, new start. Mm-hmm. It's not quite January the 1st, but it's a kind of January the 1st. So we're doing all the things we normally do. We're excited about that. We're really excited about the Leaders Conference. Good number of people coming to the Leaders Conference. You've still got a bit of time for the last discounted price.
Yeah,
we'd love to see you in November.
September, early October. Yeah,
yeah, we'd love to see you in November as we think about mission. Really exciting programme. You can find all the details of the programme and seminars. And an add-on event, which maybe you can talk about in just a moment, Phil, which I'm really excited about. So I think this whole topic of mission, in some ways it doesn't feel like it's top of every leader's agenda, but it's just critical to the life and health of the church. We're given a task by the Lord Jesus Christ to reach those around us and indeed around the world. So I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about some of the stories we're going to tell. It's just energizing to hear how all over the world, as Paul writes to the Colossians, the gospel is growing and bearing fruit. So yeah, that's November. In between then and now, we've got some other things that are being launched. We're launching a new series of webinar sort of training sessions. Graham Bynan is doing a 3-session track on thinking about sung worship, lessons we can learn from the past and how we apply them today. And we're trying to do some more of these flexible things over the course of the year. You'll have to keep watching and listening to hear some of the more details. And then straight after the Leaders Conference, we're getting ready for Journeys. That's our next big sort of date in the diary, if you like, which is our weekend, heavily subsidised weekend for those considering Christian ministry. And actually now, September, this is the beginning of the kind of the year, as we've just said, that's the moment to be starting to think about, or who could we send along to that maybe would encourage them to think about ministry or their training for ministry, and we want to encourage them to take the next steps. We always say that's one of the favourite things that we do in the year, and I'm already excited about looking forward to that. So those are the two immediate things. Straight after that, we've got Rising Lights, which is in April. I'm going to let John talk about that.
Tell us about Rising Lights, John.
Rising Lights is our new Easter event. Many people are sort of used to going to Easter events, an opportunity to gather together with Christians from all around the country to receive really encouraging Bible ministry. Great for families and young people to be built up. Opportunity for seminars touching on a whole range of issues in culture and the Christian life, maybe that you're not able to cover in local church life in quite the same way.
Or people you can't access in church life.
Yeah, and speakers that you might not be able to see there. Yeah. So Word Alive, sadly, had to close a couple of years back because the sort of venue closed and there wasn't an option for that. We felt we wanted to step into that space and run a similar Easter event that would bring people together for fellowship and encouragement and Bible ministry from all across the country. So we're going to be in Torquay from the 6th to the 10th of April 2026. It's slightly different from other Easter events because we don't have a holiday park. It's get your own accommodation, but we've got a conference centre and multiple venues for Bible ministry from Paul Mallard, evening celebrations, a raft of seminars, and most of our speakers are in place. Adrian can say a little bit perhaps about who's coming to talk about that. We've got a wonderful kids and youth programme being run by Growing Young Disciples. So we think this is a great opportunity for churches to be built up. We think it's great for FIEC churches. It's great for others who share our gospel convictions. We'd love them to be there and to be with us. We want to serve the gospel more widely in the nation. So lots of information on the website about how to book. We'd love you to come and join us.
£160 for adults, £40 for kids. And just say a little bit about the seminar.
Well, let me just say about one track, because we've been talking about evangelism. We've been talking about normalizing evangelism. So Glenn Scrivener, I'm very excited that he's going to come and run a track for us. Speak Life are going to be involved, the organization that he works for. Glenn Scrivener's track is Evangelism for Normal People. We want to move away from the professionalism of evangelism, saying only a few people can do it, to say actually no, everybody can do something. And Glenn's going to help us with that. Evangelism for Normal People. That really ties in with what we've been talking about.
Absolutely. It goes back to all that stuff with Uncover. So all of these events will be in the show notes. Do book. We'd love to see you at the Leaders Conference, at Journeys, if you're exploring ministry, at Rising Lights with your church. It would be great to see you. And you mentioned the after event, which I'll just give a quick plug to as well. Reflecting Heaven, we're going to be thinking about what it means to build an intercultural church where you are. We all know that our communities are changing.
I doubt anybody's church looks the same as it did 5 years ago.
Absolutely right. So we're going to be thinking about how do we engage with that? How do we do that wisely? We've got a great lineup of speakers talking about their different experiences, and we're going to have some really solid training from serving in mission trainer who was on the podcast 3 or 4 weeks ago called Tim. You can look back on that, and we'll put the link in the show notes.
Bring it on, Phil.
Intercultural ministry. Well, brothers,
it's also the beginning of the National Football League in America. That's why I've got my
Is that why you've got your Eagles?
Did you not know that?
I did not
playing
know
tonight
that.
The Cowboys.
As
Thank
I
you.
Always say, Thank you for the bringing ball that up. Is the wrong shape.
just give a plug for us. We start the year.
You can.
I mean, I do think that, I mean, at the moment, there's lots going on in the world politically, lots of bad news, lots of tension, lots of frustration. I do think from a Christian perspective, it's actually a really encouraging moment, and we must not lose sight of that. Lots of evidence that I think there is gospel openness. Churches are growing. We're getting reports from lots and lots of churches of seeing people coming into church, people being converted. I ran into a pastor at the weekend, just sort of in the town, a pastor in Northamptonshire, was talking about 10 remarkable conversions in the last year in the church. And I think that's repeated everywhere. So I think as Christians, as we start this new year, this new period, we need to just, in a sense, maintain that confidence and optimism in the gospel. And just to plug, the EA has been organising a national week of prayer that's happening at the moment. You know, all our work is dependent on God. We need God to move in our churches, to grow the work of the gospel. That's what our nation most needs. And it'd be great if we were all, as churches, praying for the work of the gospel and for the life of our nation.
I think I want to push what you're saying a little bit further, John, because actually as leaders, we have a responsibility, don't we, for setting tone in church as well as content. You know, often, I guess people who've been listening will be preaching, or they'll be teaching, or they'll be running small groups or running kids' work, whatever they may be doing. But actually, it's not just about the content we put into those things. It's the tone in which we lead. And I think it is easy as we look around, especially as we review the news, which we're about to do, just to be very downbeat about stuff. But there is Christian news as well, which often is very upbeat. And I think in setting the tone, we've got to be careful that we don't counter the joy and delight of the gospel and actually what's being achieved in gospel tone and gospel terms. So yeah, I want to say to leaders, as you lead this Sunday, watch your tone and not just what you're planning.
Can I riff off that a little bit? Well, I was in a fraternal group over the summer.
You keep quiet.
I'll just be quiet.
Thought on that, we were thinking about intercessory prayer in church. I think in many churches you get the feeling that often intercessory prayer is all the things we think that are wrong with the world. We basically bring to God all the things that are happening, and the result is it creates this environment of we're in a crisis situation. And that isn't balanced by joyful thankfulness for what God is doing and encouragement. So I do think in church life, we need to, as leaders, be giving our churches the encouragement of what God is doing. Are we in our services saying, this is what God has done in this week? This is how we've seen him move. This is how he's working. Are we telling those stories and giving thanks for them? And I just think that that's right. It needs to infuse the whole way that we lead our churches.
And should even a leader, Phil's going to.
I was going to riff off Phil, that. Go on. Carry on.
I mean, you know, there's a question about whether leaders should actually be doing more praying publicly in church. I think because we want to create everybody participating, we often give out some parts of the service. And, you know, it's not uncommon to go to a church and never hear the pastor praying from the front. And I think or a leader praying from the front. And we're going to do something on that as well, Phil.
Excellent. Well, just to riff off what John was saying, I think there is a place, isn't there, for testimony on Sundays and Sunday mornings
that's right.
that isn't just how somebody came to faith. This is my testimony of what what the Lord has been doing this week in my life.
How he's helped me.
Which, and this encourages the wider body of Christ. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the news stories that have made the headlines past couple of... everything we've been talking about is good news, and we don't want to downplay that. And the big story that's dominating, we're recording this on Friday morning, this past sort of 48 hours, has been the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, and the issues to do with the stamp duty paid on a property she bought in Hove, in the Brighton and Hove area. Essentially, she has admitted she did not pay enough stamp duty. She claimed initially that she had been given the wrong advice. Her legal team have said they didn't give her the wrong advice.
One of the legal teams has
said that overnight. It's come out in the newspapers this morning. There's an investigation over whether or not she broke the ministerial code. Lots of questions being asked. We don't know at this point how
that's
that will
gonna
go.
Report
that could
today,
come today. It might do. So by the time you listen to this, that might have happened. Some people are saying her position's untenable. Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, said he wouldn't sort of comment on whether he would sack her or not if she had been found to break the ministerial code. How do we reflect on this? Is this a simple mistake from complicated financial matters that we should give Angela Rayner the benefit of the doubt to? Is it more sinister here? She is also the housing minister. That's the other kind of element here. So there's an element of hypocrisy has been leveled at her, rightly or wrongly. What can we learn from this?
A couple of things from me to kick off. First of all, it's quite a sad story.
It is. When you read her statement, it's very sad. I agree with you.
About a severely disabled son.
Absolutely.
Who was disabled from birth because of birth complications, got a large payout, and the trust has long been established to provide for him as he grows older. And then also divorce, a relationship splitting up and how you care for a child in that circumstance. And I think it's important to remember in all the sort of the financial dealings that we're going to be talking about and people are dealing about, that this isn't just, someone squirreling away money. This is, there is something, there's a compassionate, quite a sad story actually behind it all. We need to remember that. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing to say is tax is extraordinarily complicated and it's difficult to know the answers to some of the questions you're asking.
You used to work in this area, didn't you?
I did used to work in this area. And just to be clear, we're not giving tax
advice. No, fine.
So a very helpful article that I read overnight by a tax lawyer saying there are different categories. There's basically tax evasion, which is illegal. I mean, if it is tax evasion, that's very straightforward. You're breaking the law. Mm. There is tax avoidance where you use loopholes to avoid paying tax. It's legal, but it's morally dubious. And then there are mistakes. And the tax lawyer who has done work for the HMRC says the vast majority of these things fall in the category of mistakes.
Yeah,
but then there are different kinds of mistakes.
Yeah. Well, I would say this is a mistake.
Yes. Well, it appears to be.
Yes.
But then there are willful mistakes or, there is wrong advice that's given or... There are, there are situations where people should have sought advice and didn't, and that has a different culpability. So it raises some very interesting questions about sin generally, actually, which is there are different kinds of culpability depending on, how you approach things. And we just don't know in this circumstance yet what's going on. So, for example, let's just hypothesize, if she was told, if you do this, you don't have to pay the tax, and she relied on that advice from someone because she took advice from other people as well, then that's a different category from if she was told, no, you do need to pay advice, and then
she chose to ignore it.
Yeah. So I think until we know some of that detail, we've got to be a little bit careful about passing judgment. It does raise some interesting leadership questions. Perhaps we'll come on to those. But I think, to me, those are some of the things that at the moment are uncertain. So we've got to be a little bit careful about pronouncing judgment.
I mean, I'm not wanting to pronounce judgment, but I think there are leadership lessons about mistakes that are made, how you deal with those
exactly
in church
I entirely agree with Adrian. We don't quite know what the full circumstances are, and those will no doubt come out, and that will influence what happens. I think it's a reminder to us, actually, as those watching, it's easy to come to quick judgment without knowing all of the circumstances. There's obviously a whole background that we're not aware of. We have no idea what advice was given and who it was given by. So all of that will no doubt emerge. It seems to me from a leadership perspective, the reminder for us as leaders here is when you're in a leadership position, inevitably people will scrutinize what you do. Mm. And here this was bound to be politically sensitive, buying a quite expensive property, what looks like a second home in an environment in which stamp duty is being payable on second homes. I think the warning to leaders is we ought to be aware of how our behavior could be perceived.
I was listening to a government
minister who was saying on the radio this morning, well, we all know that this looks terrible. And at one level, of course it does. Mm. It may not be terrible, but it inevitably looks terrible. And therefore, one would think that if you're in a leadership position, you would do everything possible to try to make sure you were doing what was right, to make sure that you're not caught out and then discrediting your government, your leadership, your policies. So I think here there is a reminder to us as leaders that we need to be self-aware of things that we do and how those might be perceived. We've got an obligation to act with integrity. And sometimes that will mean being more cautious and getting more advice just to make sure that we are doing what is right and legitimate. And sometimes even doing things which are right, because we are setting an example, will actually convey the wrong message and might lead to accusations of hypocrisy. So I think that there are challenges for us as leaders to recognize that people look to us to live by a standard, to live by integrity, to set an example that correlates with what we are asking others to do. And that ought to be part and parcel of the way that
we lead. So it's not sufficient just to say, well, my conscience is clear.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's not sufficient, is it? Just another little extra thing on this, Phil, which is, we as leaders do need to get advice in all kinds of situations, not least actually when it comes to property.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people live in manses and have a house somewhere else on the housing market. We were in that situation when I was first a pastor, and we were advised to get tax advice about what was the status of that other house and whether it falls within the Inland Revenue description of your principal residence. And again, this is not advice. It's not an advice line. But we were told to go to HMRC and get a written statement that it was our principal residence, which we did. So yes, don't just assume that because you've only got one property, if you're not living in it, that everything's okay. Get some advice.
Let's move on. Do we have a free speech problem in our country, John?
Well, I think we clearly do have a free speech problem in our country. I think that's increasingly recognised. Yeah. So free speech is long established. It's also been a principle in the UK that free speech is not absolute. So seeking to promote hatred, sort of stirring up racial hostility, harassment, there have long been laws that say there's some speech that's not appropriate. Used to have a blasphemy law because of the way that it affects and impacts other people. So we need to start by saying that free speech has never been absolutely unqualified. But there does seem to be a recognised problem at the moment of how the law is being used to restrain people making comments that some groups or identities might find as being offensive, and then that being treated in a criminal manner. Rarely is it prosecuted, but it leads to investigations and all of that trouble. So even this week, quite a number of people, the sort of leader of the Metropolitan Police has said there's a need for the law to be clarified so the police will know what to enforce. So I think there is certainly a problem with free speech, or certainly the way that some speech, particularly social media comments, is being sort of policed and enforced. Whether that amounts to some major failing of free speech. So this week, Nigel Farage was speaking to the American Senate hearing, was claiming that there's a free speech problem in the UK, which makes us the equivalent of North Korea with an authoritarian government. And that's been, I think, quite rightly criticised. Because, of course, in North Korea, and we need to remember as Christians, North Korea is the most persecuting country in the world, that puts Christians in labour camps, that murders Christians. The UK is nothing like that. No. We do live in an environment in which people are fearful of speaking. So I think how you balance the right to be able to express your opinions, but that line of the point at which it has moved to actively promoting hatred and criminality is really difficult to work out. So I think that's the challenge for lots of countries. I mean, interestingly, it was pointed out in America that even in America, there are limitations on speech, certain kinds of speech which are not allowed. So in America, students are having their visas revoked on universities because of expressing pro-Palestinian kind of opinions. So even in that context, there's a limitation to speech that is regarded as being acceptable. So every society has to wrestle with sort of how to uphold freedom of speech, but not to allow that freedom to be misused.
What do we say to people in the workplace, John? Because I think, especially some of the headlines, if you don't dig into the detail and read the court summaries, some of the headlines of the cases of people who have been sacked, Christians who have been sacked for various reasons, possibly make people think, well, I can't say anything in the workplace. I'm a teacher. I can't say anything about my Christian faith. I'm a nurse. I can't say anything about being a Christian. There seem to be a lot of cases like that. What confidence can we give our people that they they can normalize evangelism, as we were talking about earlier.
I think there are a small number of cases rather than a lot of cases, right. But there is a fear created from those. Actually, good resources have been produced by, for example, the Evangelical Alliance and others talking about our rights to speech in the workplace. And as long as we are respectful in the way that we speak and careful in our language, there's no reason why we can't speak of Christ and speak of our faith. In many of those cases, actually, it's been found that the authority, the employer, was wrong to restrict speech. So in the main, Christians have taken action and have been vindicated. Of course, the problem is that often that involves going through a lengthy legal process. And so people are fearful of getting caught up in that process, even if in the end they are ultimately vindicated. Yeah. But I do think that we need to encourage people that they can speak respectfully and carefully. And there's a difference between sharing Christ and what is moving into the realm of a more aggressive culture warring against others. Whether we need to do that is a debatable question. But the starting point, sharing our faith and what we believe in polite and respectful ways, is perfectly legal. And sometimes it is employers who are oversensitive or who have an agenda who wrongly take action against that.
But we do care about free speech as Christians.
Yeah, we do. And I think probably that's what Paul is hinting at in 1 Timothy 2, when we're told to pray for a quiet life. Mm. I don't think it means that we can, you know, that all Christians need to be like little church mice. I think it basically means that we can get on being Christians and doing the things that Christians are called to be. That should be part of our prayer, and we should be praying for that. So I think we do believe in free speech. We have to wrestle with what that means in a multi-faith world and a multi-faith country. You know, if we're allowed free speech, who else is allowed free speech, for example? You can't have one without the other, I don't think. So there are some things to wrestle with there. But yeah, we do believe in free speech.
And let's not forget, we have remarkable free speech in our country.
Yeah, compared to other nations. Yeah,
free to preach the gospel. Our churches will be gathering on Sunday. They will be proclaiming Christ openly. We have remarkable freedom to engage in street preaching. We have remarkable freedom to engage on social media. I don't think we should lose sight of the remarkable freedoms that we do have.
North Korea, we are not.
Proclaim the gospel. And we need to make the most of those, but to be careful. And in some of the cases, it's that line between expressing an opinion that might be offensive and moving into basically urging people to do things that are criminal or harmful and hurtful to others. That's the point at which in the law at the moment, a line is crossed.
Not everybody will know the name Daniel Levy, but Daniel Levy has been the chairman of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club for 25 years. And Adrian, being a huge Spurs fan, he's not, would like to talk about this. But there's an interesting story here. This is a man who's been at the helm of Spurs for more than two decades and has now stepped back as chairman after a huge kind of barrage of criticism from Tottenham's fans. And it seems that there has been a lot of success off the pitch, fantastic new stadium, all that kind of thing. But on the pitch, they haven't been winning trophies, which is what the fans want. There's been lots of kind of Levy out banners and balloons at matches for a couple of seasons.
Carousel of managers.
Yeah, absolutely. Just trying to sort of quick fix success, which they've not had. Well, what can we learn from such a long tenure and then how he's left?
Well, it's worth saying, isn't it, the football chairman are not just like a chairman of a board democratically elected. Well, they can be, but this particular one is also the money man.
Yes.
So his chairman and sort of ownership, somewhat. I can't be bothered to look into the ownership structure of Spurs.
Of Spurs, why not?
Because I'm not a Spurs fan. Oh. I'm another part of North London, just down the road.
The Red Arse.
Yes, the Arsenal. So, but he's had a lot of power, and he's been able to largely ignore the fans groaning and grumbling. But there comes a point where you can't ignore it any further. And so he's stepping away. Quite what that's going to look like, we're not entirely sure. I think there is something about the relationship, isn't there, between, in this case, the fans of the club, who are the sort of the presentable side, if you like. They're the people who sort of look as though they've got the moral ownership of the club. There are the fans, and then there is the leadership. And there's clearly been this division between the two. And I think Levy leaving has demonstrated that ultimately you can't have a gap between those two. That's just not sustainable. It's sustainable for a while, and if you have all the power and all the money, it's sustainable for a long while, but it's not ultimately sustainable. There needs to be a relationship of trust, really, I think, between, in this case, the owner and the chairman of a football club and the supporters. And trust quickly breaks down. Yeah. It's interesting how quickly. I think that's one of the things that leaders need to know, that trust quickly breaks down and takes a long time to earn. And I think leaders need to be leaders. They do need to lead. Sometimes that means taking difficult decisions. Sometimes that means setting direction, even when it feels like that's a change of, you know, a change of wind direction for a church. But actually, what really will keep that relationship between leaders and a church intact is trust. It's relationship. It's all relational. And I think that's really important, that leaders invest in their own relationships with one another. There's a sense of trust amongst them. But also there's a sense of trust between members and leaders. Mm. And in different church contexts and different church polities, that works itself out in different ways. That might be done through the church meeting. It might be done through the way you communicate. It might be done through the way that you demonstrate the love you have for people, all kinds of different things. But there needs to be that trust. And I think one of the things that leaders sometimes neglect is the pursuit of building relationships in the church. They're not simply employees who are delivering sermons week by week or a Bible study. No, that the relationship between us is more intimate than that. Mm. It's more relational than that. And I think there are elements of our work that is job-like, but being a leader in a church is not a job.
Time is gone, but John, give us 30 seconds on this, brother.
Well, I don't have any great knowledge about kind of Tottenham and where it is there.
Really? Let it stay that way.
Having followed the stories, I think what's quite intriguing is how do we measure success, what success looks like? So it seems as though he did quite a good job of leading the club through this period. Yeah. Stadium was redeveloped. They've done reasonably well in their performance.
Good foundation, good academy.
But yet he hasn't won trophies. Mm. And I think that's the challenge here, is that if there's an expectation that success means winning trophies, well, only a small number of clubs have won the Premier League. Very few have ever won European champ competitions. So the vast majority are not going to ever achieve that level of success, but yet there is that immense expectation. So what do we expect of leaders for them to be able to deliver? I mean, you support Bolton. I can't imagine that you're thinking because they've not won the Premiership that that's a total failure on the part of the team.
Some might say, I guess.
And I think actually for church leaders, sometimes people can have an expectation of what they ought to be able to deliver that is just unrealistic. Mm. We're not in a competitive game in which we've got to be the top, the winner, the trophy winner. Actually, being faithful and serving Christ faithfully isn't to be measured by that metric. So I think it's just a reminder to us that what we look for in our leaders and how we judge their success needs to be very different. Yeah. And actually, being faithful, keeping going, making the most of the opportunity that we have, realistically, given our context and our situation, it is actually what God asks of us. Mm. And I think sometimes great pressure can be placed on leaders to achieve more than ever is really possible in that context. And that inevitably creates stress for leaders. It creates burnout. It leads to people leaving. In some churches and contexts, means a high turnover of leaders, none of whom ever quite deliver to expectations. So I think there are maybe some lessons for us as to how we think about what we expect from our leaders and what we think, for want of a word, success in our church means.
Brothers, thank you for talking about all that's been going on in the news this week. I hope you have appreciated this. Hope it's helped you in your work and ministry. Do rate, leave a review so others can find it. And we'll look forward to speaking to you again soon. God bless.
Thanks.
Thank you.